with a nice cup of Joe.
What's up, Joe, bro?
Featuring Joe Spadoni.
He's an Italian.
And Joe, the Butcher Boy Shasky.
I am slippery.
Oh! The best part of waking up is morning roast in your cup.
It is the morning roast, man, on 95.7 The Game.
This fish is stinking from the head up.
You know, Joe, good morning. Spadoni, Shasky, morning roast. I've been thinking about this long and hard. Like, I think sometimes people that cover the teams get stuck in their bubble, and they think that everybody's at the games. Everybody is following on every social media platform, every single nuance of every single thing that happens.
We're too tapped in.
Yeah, but when the reality is like most people, like, they have busy lives and they're going through things. So as Willy Adames is struggling, right, they're watching these games and they're like, the dude looks like he's trying hard. I see him smiling when other people are having success. I see him like high-fiving Wilmer Flores, and Wilmer's having a monster year. And all we're really consuming, most fans, are the games and what the television is showing us on the games. I'm not sure how many Giants fans are actually following Willy Adames on his social media accounts. I'm not sure how many Giants fans are tapped into the 7 or 8 beat writers and every single day and all the sound that comes out of the clubhouse. And they're just watching. So I do believe that, like, body language for a player in sports struggling or succeeding or whatever factors into how you view someone.
Ooh, that's
right?
Interesting.
I really do think, I think a lot of how we viewed Brandon Belt was through the body language of the success and fails.
See, I don't even think it, we can keep it sports because we're a sports talk radio station. And good morning to you, Joe Shasky, Sam Carter, Matt, everyone out there just getting off work, getting ready for the week. Finals, all of you students out there hitting those books. Appreciate all you, all those people that are graduating. I'm seeing a lot of graduates. Congratulations to you that are graduating. And shout out to those watching on Twitch and YouTube, brought to you by First NorCal Credit Union. For a low-rate auto loan, apply online or just ask for First NorCal financing at the dealer. We are coming to you live from the Laughing Monk Studios. Laughing Monk, righteously brewed here in San Francisco. We're talking Giants halfway home here on a Tuesday. Feels like a Monday, but it is a Tuesday after the holiday. And hope you all had a lovely Memorial Day weekend. Dave Fleming joining us in about 27 minutes, voice of the San Francisco Giants, and our 95.7 The Game Giants insider is going to be talking some Gigantes here who are in Detroit after falling yesterday 3-1. And we're talking about Willy Adames. Obviously, we're talking about contracts. And I was getting on not just sports. I think in the workplace, we care about body language too. We care about
big time.
We care about people that are going to be here that put us in a good mood. We come to this job to be put, like, because it's fun, not because of the money. Not because of the money, because it's fun. The money helps, obviously. That's part of it. I got into this, though, because I love sports.
Yes.
You love sports. That's what we do. Carter loves sports. Sam loves, we all love sports. We're junkies for this stuff. So if any of us comes in with a bad attitude, hey, we'll talk about it. We'll say, hey, like, but we all agree. That stuff needs to be left at home sometimes.
Debbie Downer dude in every work setting.
Yes.
Whether behind the scenes, face fronting, it does not matter, can ruin the entire workplace environment.
We're all dealing with stuff. Don't bring it to the workplace. That's what we like to say. And I don't think Willy Adames is bringing his own personal struggles and you know, demons, if you will, to the rest of the team. And that is something that is important in all this, because we've seen it in the past. You mentioned a guy, Klay Thompson, and how it went out towards the end. You saw the body language. You saw him on the bench at that thousand-yard stare, Joe.
He's a legend.
He's a legend, but it doesn't matter. You could be a legend. You could be a guy that's been here for a couple months. Body language is a big deal.
I also felt like, and this is going, like, spiritual here for a second, but, like, every miss early in a game felt heavy and heavier and heavier, not just for the player, not just for the team, but for also the people in the arena rooting for him.
Would you think I'm crazy if I told you I was at the Lakers-Warriors preseason? So this was like a week before the season started, right?
Mm-hmm.
2 years ago. So this is Clay's going into his what would be his final year.
Season, yeah.
But coming off that bad series against the Lakers, obviously, where he was just awful, probably his worst series he's ever had in his career. And you saw the struggles become more and more heightened. Like, oh, Clay's going up against his dad's team, right? Michael Thompson and the team he grew up rooting for, you know, the Kobe's of the world, right? And he just saw it. The lights were just so damn bright at Crypto.com Arena or at Chase Center. He just, nothing could go down. And then you saw, even in that preseason game, Joe, kind of three-fourths full. I was sitting next to young Benny, my son, and just the fans just being like, oh, because he missed a couple three-pointers in the first quarter.
You could feel it in the air.
This was a preseason game, Joe.
I know.
And that was a sign of things to come for the regular season.
Like, I remember distinctively when I heard the booing for Deebo Samuel on that Thursday night game when he dropped that ball. Oof. Was it against the Rams?
The Rams,
walk-in.
Yep.
And I was like, whoa.
It was like raining that day, too, I want to say, right? Yeah, it was like heavy mist.
And you could feel, like, and this was weeks of frustration finally boiling over, and the whole entire stadium was like, you've got to be kidding me. Right. I remember, like, there are certain kickers that this has happened to. Like, Jake Moody is one of recent memory, but if you're a Niner fan and you're in your 30s, like, there are certain kickers that once they miss a couple of kicks, they go out there, and that next miss feels like it just zaps the energy from the entire stadium.
I'm looking at a clip right now, Joe, of a guy that also had bad body language towards the end there in that season. It was Jordan Poole for the Warriors.
That's a good call.
When he got subbed out.
Every turnover for Jordan Poole, every miss, you're so right.
And when he went on to the bench, he'd be yelling, he'd be talking. Listen, we're not saying this is right or wrong from the player's perspective. I have no idea what these guys are going through on a day in, day out basis. This is what happens when you just see clips like these and you hear comments after games. There was a lot of comments from Clay after the game where it didn't really sound like a leader at times from a fan's perspective. It sounded like someone that's going through it, and sometimes some people can perceive it as, oh, that person's pouting, or it's a pity party, or it's like, when is this going to end? Hey, smile?
Look at Juan Soto right now in New York.
Yep.
I think part of why Juan Soto is getting, and his numbers are way better than Adames' across the board, but I think obviously the money is a huge factor. I think it's the way that he's like very indifferent to people criticizing him, and it feels like he throws a little childish tantrum if he doesn't bat exactly where he should be batting in the lineup in the two hole.
Right. By the way, his numbers aren't that much better than...
he got seven homers?
That's exactly. Two more homers than Willie Adames in the same amount of RBIs. And then the hits, he only has 45 hits. So hasn't been that good. He's batting 230. Has not been great
so
far.
So he's been slightly better.
Slightly better. But the Mets, again, they're a team that's winning. I think they're 10 games over 500 or something right now. Like, they're one of the good teams. But it helps when, who do you have? You have Francisco Lindor there, too. You have Pete Alonso. You have guys that now, albeit Lindor's not a made man there. He might be a made man, but he came from Cleveland. So he was a free agent at one point, but he feels more like a Met at this point, if anything. Pete Alonso, obviously, guy.
I'm glad you brought up Clay, though. And I'm like just thinking about it here. I'm like, all right, so he was such a legend. Well, Chase Center was never going to boo him.
No.
But that being said, I don't feel like we ever rallied around him. We were waiting for him to go on a run, and it
never
felt
came.
Like that run never came.
Yeah,
and it just felt like the fans were like on the edge of their seat, ready to cheer anything he could do positive and go on a little run here, and like it just never kind of came around, and it just felt like the way it ended was so anticlimactic.
And it was unfortunate. And I think there was a lot of fans, and whether you think they're right or wrong, oh, they're not fans. No, there are fans that feel like, hey, you know what? It soured them on Clay towards the end there. Whether that's fair or not, they soured on him. But the guy, he won four titles there. He's the Splash Brother. He's one of the greatest players in the history of the sport. Might be the second greatest shooter of all time behind Steph, as far as I'm concerned, even ahead of Ray Allen and Reggie Miller. The guy is just unbelievable. He had 30-plus points in a freaking quarter, for crying out loud. Game 6, Clay was the thing. But even all of that goodwill built up within just a year, Joe. Hell, maybe it was just within a series against the Lakers. It all just, maybe it wasn't even against the Lakers, against the Kings. That's when it first started. It was the comments after the Kings series.
Yeah, but
about
I don't think every fan felt that. I think there was a small, segment.
But I think that mattered, though.
Okay.
I think it's just like, hey, man, time and place. Why are we talking about a contract right now?
Well, that's, I think, part of Deebo, and Brandon Ayuk also to another degree, is like, there was all of these other little things that they were doing so publicly that became so large you couldn't ignore it. And then when you start slipping on the field, and you judo chop a kicker on national television, right? No, like, you laugh, but you know that's true.
That was pretty crazy that happened. Tabor Pepper had to get involved. He's not on the team anymore, I don't think, either.
I think both Ayuk and Deebo, there was a whiff of, are you a good teammate? And I don't even know if that's fair. I'm not even sure if that's fair. But there was a whiff of that where you just kind of contemplate, like, are you a good teammate? And I think that's when the whole narrative started to shift on those guys. Like, Ayuk didn't wear the right shorts. That was bizarre.
Well, and it was him and Shanahan talking about it, and there was video, like, evidence of it, so which made it even like,
and they both,
what the hell's going on?
Requested trades and did things on social media. Again, I'm not sure how many people are locked in on every little thing these guys do on social media.
No, but we talk about it on air here. We relay it to the masses. We do, yes.
And I do think that that factored into it.
Absolutely. And again, we're talking about Willie Adames and just a couple months of struggles right now. And no one's booed him yet at home. No one, the boo birds have not come out for him.
I agree.
I've watched some games, at least on television. I'm not hearing any so
far. But I don't think that Clay ever, I don't think he ever warranted any booing. I don't think anyone was ready to boo him or anything. We were frustrated, and I think we wanted it as bad. No one wants it as much as the athlete. I want to make that clear. The athlete wants it. Whatever you think, these guys want it so bad. But we wanted it for him, too, to some degree. I think fans wanted him to turn it around, and it just never came.
No.
And, like, I think about Alex Smith, who was a guy that I booed. I remember distinctively booing him. And in part, why I booed him wasn't because of him. It was ownership. It was the fact that we didn't take Aaron Rodgers. It was the fact that Aaron Rodgers hung a Super Bowl banner before we did. Like, all of those things. And then, yes, you're the avatar for my frustration. Let me boo you out.
I do think there, Sam brought up a funny one about the Raiders and the boo birds from them, because obviously Raiders formerly here in Oakland. They're in Las Vegas now. But I do remember I was watching a game. It was through the television.
Yeah.
And it was the last game, I think, of the regular season, which I don't think meant anything to the Raiders, quite frankly. They're playing the Denver Broncos. Both teams were eliminated. But it was Antonio Pierce took over, right? It was that big run. Remember, they beat Kansas City on Christmas. They had that big run.
Yeah, yeah.
They were a pretty good team for a little bit. And Aiden O'Connell was the backup. And he was but he was the quarterback. He was the backup, and he became the starter over Jimmy. And then he took the team, and he was pretty solid the rest of the way. He gets hurt in the last game and is not the first quarterback out for the first series in the second half. Who was it? Jimmy Garoppolo took the field for one play, Joe.
Oh, my God.
One play, booed out of his mind. Just booed relentless for one play. One. And he knew the writing was on the wall then. Probably going to get cut. They're going to move on from the guy. But that was one full season of Jimmy for a fan base that had no ill, that didn't know anything about him. Or they did know something about him, but he was Jimmy Garoppolo. Like, sure. We moved on from Derek Carr. Great. And he comes in there, and all it took was Devontae Adams to be done with him, one of the quote-unquote leaders of the team, your number one wide receiver, to vouch for the backup, and that's when the fan base just turned on immediately. Okay, you're not winning, and our number one wide receiver is done with you? That means we're done with you. So when other players...
Yes.
Other players start sending messages out there that you respect more and that are contributing, fan bases will gravitate towards that. I think of a guy like Draymond Green has a lot of sway within the fan base when it comes to some of his comments. People ride or die with Draymond.
Yeah.
Whether for right or wrong, Joe, with some of his comments.
You're right.
You've seen it.
You're right.
He'll say some things in a podcast, and everyone's like, oh, yeah, you know, Draymond's so right. Like, I think about what he said about Carl Anthony Towns a couple months ago, calling him out. Oh, he was scared. He was ducking me. No, Draymond, actually, he was attending a funeral. But people stuck with Draymond. He's like, yeah, I hate Kat now because Draymond does. Like, it can be a double-edged sword, if you will, when it comes to the comments to a fan base. They could love you or hate you, but sometimes that love is not really love. It's just blind loyalty. And I would urge caution to fans when it comes to that stuff.
I would also say that the rage that you might see online or at a stadium directed at an individual player sometimes is, it's meant for someone else. Like, the most famous one of all time is Joe Lacob getting booed during the halftime Hall of Fame induction or the retirement jersey for Chris Mullin.
Yeah.
Okay, fans weren't booing Lacob as an isolated individual. They were booing everything.
Yep.
They were booing 40 years of ineptitude. They were booing Robert Ryle and the prior ownership. They were booing the Monte Ellis trade. They were booing everything. The fact that you were moving the team from Oakland into San Francisco. Like, that to me was a layered boo that is one of the most famous Bay Area booings that could possibly happen. Johnny LeMaster. If I say the name Johnny LeMaster, do you even know?
I know the name, yes.
He was famously booed. And on the back of his jersey, he came out one time, and instead of LeMaster on the back, it said boo. John Brody famously was booed by the Kezar crowd of the 49ers back in the day. And then famously turned around, while being booed by everyone and flipped off the entire crowd. And then they started to applaud him.
There you go.
Right? So I know we think of the Bay Area as kind of like a soft serve fan base. I think we're quietly kind of crazy.
When there's expectations involved, this fan base can get nasty just like any other fan base can get nasty because there has to be a level of expectations. I really believe this. If you're a championship team or a playoff-bound team potentially, that's when fans start caring a whole hell of a lot more. Right now, the Giants are kind of in a honeymoon phase. Like, think about a new relationship. Okay, I'm back in it. Things are going well right now. You're 8 games over .500. You're a playoff team. You're in the honeymoon phase.
Mm.
Starts getting the dog days of August towards September, and you're hovering around .500. And you're a game here or there from either being in or out of it with any given win or loss. Yeah, I do think you're going to start hearing some things from the fans when it comes to if Chapman's struggling, if Adames is struggling. It doesn't matter who's struggling. You're going to hear it. There's only a few made guys on this team that I think are bereft from any booze right now. If I was to list them off, it'd probably be Logan Webb, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think he's.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anyone's booing Logan Webb right now. And after that, when I just go up and down the roster,
I don't think Yaz would get
Yaz booed. Probably not.
I think people respect again. Yaz is a great example of if we think you try really, really hard and care. I think that would give you the benefit of the doubt. AJ Pierzynski, for example.
Oh.
You know why we booed him? Because it felt like he was a jerk.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that he probably was.
He kicked whatever he did to the trainer. Right. I don't even, you know. But, like, we booed him because we thought he was not a nice person.
Right.
Right. And I don't get that sense with Willy Adames.
And then he goes on and he wins, obviously, with the White Sox a year later. And then he becomes a White Sox guy. But it didn't matter at that point because I don't care what you did for another team. Right before, or after me, what did you do here? I'm going to remember you that way forever.
Matt Morris, do you remember that name?
Yeah,
Matt Morris came here after being a Cardinal, was a high price free agent, and within months, everyone was like, "Screw this guy, get him out of here!"
Right,
and it felt like he was defiantly angry at us for his poor performances.
Right, not Michael Morris, Matt Morris.
No, yes. Matt Morris, the pitcher. He was, I think, he got a $30 million deal as a free agent with the Giants, and
Morris. Got it. No, yeah, I think so.
I remember him. I remember in 07, he came out and asked, like, are we focused on winning or are we focused on a home run chase? And he was traded like a week later.
Dude,
so there's your answer on that one.
That's a hilarious quote, actually.
He was
I'm paraphrasing, but yeah.
Frankly, though, he was a bum for the Giants. He was garbage.
He had a good four-start stretch one time.
Tight. He had a four starts.
It might have been five starts.
Five starts. Thank you. $27 million from the Giants. Three-year deal. There
what
you
did
go.
I say, 30? I was not bad.
Yeah, 10-15 with a 4.98 ERA. There you
does
go.
Does booing accomplish anything for a guy that's going to be here for the next 6 or 7 years?
No, it does not. It's incredibly short-sighted.
But don't you think the Giants fans want to rally around Willie?
Yes, I think they would like to right now. If it starts getting into, like, when did the true boo start for Barry Zito, I wonder? When did that happen, Joe? Do you know?
Not year one.
No, it was not year one.
Year one was 07.
Because you could talk yourself into, maybe it was a dud year, new surroundings, new ballpark.
It was Bochy's first year,
exactly.
And I thought he was a retread hire.
Yeah.
Straight up, I was like, oh my God, we got the guy that the Padres kicked out? Are you kidding me? And I've now obviously recalibrated, but I thought he was a retread hire.
Right.
We were coming off of Felipe Alou, not Moises, but Felipe Alou, and we needed something different. And it felt like he was taking over the final year of Bonds. And then we heard about this kid, the franchise, as in Lincecum, who Bonds had dubbed the franchise. And we were kind of getting a little taste of him, but it was primarily like a team and a franchise in transition. We had no expectations of winning. So Zito was just one of the many, you know, glimmers of optimism moving forward past the Bonds era. That's what I thought he was going to be, the guy that got the baton from Bonds to usher us into a new era.
And he never.
I didn't really boo him like 09.
Okay.
I think 9-10 is when it kind of got frustrating because that's when the Giants were also good, but he wasn't. And so there was like
that. The moment of no return. The moment of no return for Barry Zito for me was the second to last day of the year against the Padres at home when he walked the bases loaded and I believe walked in a run Yeah. What happened in that situation, Sam?
Yeah. No, that's October 2nd, 2010. He walked in the run there, and I remember Bochy coming out to get him, and that was you talk about when anyone's booed people off the mound. That was one of the only times I've ever booed a player that I root for off the field. Me and 39,000 other Giants fans were, because that was the last non-sellout before the streak.
They had
booing him mercilessly off the field.
Yeah. They had the opportunity to win the division, right, Sam? And instead, they had to do it the next day, which was Johnny Sanchez. And then famously, Will Venable struck out with Brian Wilson. And then Brian Wilson was running around the stadium. But everyone was like, this is the moment. Zito can become a Giant. Wipe away all the negativity. You just win today. You win the division. And everything is good. Remember that? And like the Padres totally choked down the stretch.
They did. I do remember that. By the way, Will Venable, now manager of your Chicago White Sox.
Wanted him to manage the Giants.
But he'd rather be the White Sox.
No, I'd rather have Bob Melvin right now, because I think he's doing a hell of a job, Sammy. But Bo Mel, after the loss yesterday, hey, he's just talking about Willie Adames. He's talking about everyone. The bats just need to be better, guys.
We're just not swinging bat well. And now we would sprinkle a few guys in that would be hot to score some runs. You know, other than Flo and Jung Hoo right now, we're not swinging the bat too terribly well. We got 4 of our 5 hits today. So we had an opportunity in the first. And every opportunity we had today, we either hit into a double play or didn't get it done. So, you know, we keep putting a lot of pressure on the key at-bats. We're not coming through with them. You know, they obviously did today with the green at-bat, and that was the difference in the game.
And we could get on Adames there, and that was Bob Melvin after the loss yesterday. Tigers 3-1. Tigers, most wins in baseball right now. They are very, very good. We're going to be talking to Dave Fleming about them here in about 8 minutes. Voice of the San Francisco Giants and our Giants insider, who is out there in Motown right now. But, Joe, like, we can get on Domus all we want to. It's just the team in general. They can't hit collectively right now.
Well, it's very contagious, and it feels like right now they're searching to find a lineup, right? They're putting different guys. I think yesterday Chapman was in the two-hole yesterday.
Yes, he was. It was Yaz, Chapman, Jung-Hoo, Flores.
Like, they're searching right now for a lineup combination to get the offense going. I appreciate them jumbling it around a little and trying different things. They need a jolt. And look, we could argue about lineups. I think the jolt is you make a splash trade. The problem is like, who do you get? What position do they play? What can you actually get for the parts that you want to give up? Who are you willing to give up? Like, the boss and I were sending text messages to each other last night, and I'm like, hey, look, they got some pitching. They got Birdsong. They got Harrison. They got Wisenhunt.
Yeah.
Somebody would bite on that.
Yes.
But what does that net you? And what position would you even target?
Well, and I look at, like, again, we're a long ways away from the trade deadline, but there's a lot of teams right now that could talk themselves into it. That's the thing with this third wild card, which now makes the trade deadline so interesting, is because everyone feels like, hey, I'm just a couple wins away. Remember the Braves a couple years ago? They went on their World Series run.
Mm-hmm.
No one thought they were a non-playoff team for most of the year. They get hot. They go all the way. They win. That happens in baseball more so than I feel like any other sport at this point. It doesn't happen in basketball. Football, sometimes you could have a hot run, but really it doesn't really happen, if you will. Like the Washington Commanders of the world, that doesn't happen as much anymore, getting all the way to the conference title. But in baseball, absolutely, if I'm the D-backs, right? If I'm the Cincinnati Reds or the Milwaukee Brewers or, hell, the Braves are only a couple games under 500. Everyone wrote them off for dead early in the season.
They got their guy back, Acuna. Yeah.
Acuna's exactly. That changes everything,
it
right?
It changes everything.
Matt Olson's hitting bombs. You got Sean Murphy there. They got pieces. Yeah, so that makes it a little more challenging when you're trying to bid against all these other teams that are also trying to get a big bat.
Yeah, and I just, like, I would say, hey, first base, go get a first baseman.
Mm.
But it's like, Bryce is there. So do you want to give up some of your young pitching for a guy to be a rental or a two-year, you know, kind of like placeholder?
It's tough, right? It's tough. And then you start looking at teams that aren't going to be in it. That's why you brought up the Alejandro Kirk earlier as a catcher, but he just got signed to a 5-year extension with the Toronto Blue Jays. Does that exempt you from trading for him? No, but again, he's already locked into
that
a contract.
Unlikely they're trading.
Exactly. It's unlikely there. And again, they're right hovering around 500. You know, it's not exactly, the AL East isn't exactly a world beater by any stretch. Yankees are in first place there.
That's the tough spot where the Giants are at right now. I like the direction of the franchise. I like the team. They've got a lot of really nice pieces. But again, they're lacking that centerpiece, and I feel like I'm in reruns.
And I feel like, and again, not that you have to run your own race, if you will. Shout out Bluey. There's a great Bluey episode about running your own race. The Padres, they know what they got. They know that they're who their big boppers are in the lineup. They got Machado. They got Tatis. They got Jackson Merrill.
Mm.
They got their studs locked up. the Dodgers know who they got. God, I see. I swear to God, I see highlights from Shohei Ohtani. Guy's hitting bombs at, like, every pitch now. Like, every first pitch that he gets, he's hitting a home run.
Yeah, but they're not that far ahead of you.
No, they're not. I'm saying they don't need to go after the big boppers.
No.
Though. So, but also, I say that they're also the teams that, even if they already feel like they're loaded at a certain position, they'll still go after that person because that's just who they are. That's that aggressive mindset. And I do wonder, Buster Posey, in his first full season now, and his first trade deadline as this dude, I wonder what he's going to be doing. How aggressive is he going to be? We'll talk to Dave Fleming about that on the other side. He's our Giants insider, and it's going to be brought to you by Lucky California. You need to relax. Oh, I totally know what you're saying, though. We used to be at the old building where we had like four or five. We had like so many bathrooms.
You could hide.
We could hide. Yes. We could.
You could like run down like four stations over and use that one and come over. It'd be like a mystery. Like, they don't know my shoes.
Now we all have to share one. It's not a good time. We have four different stations sharing one. Oh, it's not a good time. But other than that, things are great here. It's a Tuesday. You know, it doesn't feel like a Tuesday. I got in here today. I was like, oh, wait, it's a Monday. No, it's a Tuesday. But it feels like a Monday. And you know what? We usually don't get Dave Fleming on Tuesdays, but we got him right now, courtesy of the River Islands Guest Line, and is brought to you by Rafael Lumber and Building Supply, serving contractors, homeowners, and the community in Marin for over 50 years. Visit their showroom today, as again, he joins us once again on the River Islands Guest Line. Yeah, what's up, Joe? No, what do you want?
I was listening to him yesterday, and like, just Dave was saying, like, oh, we got, you know, the Detroit guy who's, I want to say the broadcast for them, and he's talking
TV?
About, like, I think it was the TV guy. He was
Benetti?
Interviewing. And he was basically saying, like, Detroit baseball is having this huge renaissance in terms of the fans. And it was really showcased when I was watching the game yesterday. And then him and Hunter, they're just so good together. And
yeah.
God, I loved watching. There's something about Detroit daytime baseball that I get nostalgic. Now, that being said, he brought up the same thing I said, which was, I miss the old Detroit Stadium with the overhang.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I got you. So he was just buttering you up there, Dave. Do you feel better now about coming on the show after Joe Shasky buttered you up? Dave, is he gone?
Oh,
there he is. We got you now. We got you now. You're back. You're here.
No,
we got
I listened to all the buttering up. That made me happy. I was down this morning. Now I'm pumped up.
Well, you know who's down right now, Dave? I'm watching... You know, Willy Adames, and look, no one's saying he's the worst player on the planet, you know, but he signed a big deal, and there's a lot of pressure that comes with that. And I do believe that, like, as a, you know, a fan of every sport I watch, and I think that how your teammates react to you, what type of personality are you? Do I get the sense as I'm watching on television that even though you're struggling, are you trying hard? You know, like, I think a lot of these things factor in. Do your teammates respect you? You know, and I think that there's a lot of frustration, and you saw it in the one at bat where he grounded out into the double play, and then in the ninth inning, like, first pitch swinging, and he just chops one to the shortstop. It's just like, and if they want to be a playoff team right now, obviously I want to see them make a move at the deadline, and that goes without saying, but they're going to need a better version of a lot of guys, but in particular of Willy Adames, and I could feel the struggle is real right now for him, and we need these bats to start getting hot here, and I think it starts with him.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, their biggest improvement will come when he is his normal self. He's definitely not that right now. And, you know, look, I talk to Willie almost every day. I don't get in his face and say, are you feeling the pressure? But I think it's obvious that he is, you know, this is not a try. It's an effort sport. You put hard effort every day over 162. That goes a long way towards being a great player, but it's not a try hard sport. It's not I'm doing it this at bat and forget all. It doesn't work that way. Sometimes it's even the opposite of that. And he does need to relax and have a little better game plan and approach at the plate. Because you're right. Like that, those at bats yesterday, you know, as frustrating as it's been to watch him struggle, the at bats yesterday were probably the worst he's had all year. And if you're going into an at bat thinking, I'm going after the first pitch or I'm ready to hit on the first pitch, great. I love that approach. I think it's almost always a successful approach if you get the pitch you're looking for and get your best swing off on that pitch. I love the first pitch. It's the age of the strikeout. You got guys who have incredible stuff and strikeout stuff. Don't get to the two-strike situation. I'm good with that. But if you go up there and you swing at the first pitch with your C-minus swing at a ball that's down and away and hit a little dribbler ground ball, that is not a good approach. It isn't. And he knows that. Everybody knows that. It's not. I'm not saying anything that these guys don't know themselves. But that tells you where you're just caught in between, and whether it's you're trying to force the issue or whatever. That's not who he is. He's a much better player, much better hitter. He's a very smart baseball player. And we will get that version of him at some point. It's just, you know, it's easy to get impatient waiting for that version of Adames. He did not lose his ability to play the game. He is still one of the better players in the game, and he will be that at some point. But right now, he's not the best version of himself.
You brought up like him kind of in between in terms of like it's a bad swing and he's jumping on the first pitch. I've noticed more check swings too as well, which again, there's a mechanical fundamental, you know, approach in terms of the swing mechanics. And then there's like the mental side of it. When you talk with someone like Hunter or other people around the team, what do you think it's more of right now? Is it more one than the other, or is it just both for Willie?
Yeah, I think it can be both. I do. I mean, I think you can watch him swing and think, okay, that's not the best. That's not what a great Willie Adames swing usually looks like. I tell you one thing that a lot of big leaguers will say that I think it's not just Adames, but with a bunch of these struggling guys, you can tell things by the way a player takes a pitch. Just taking a pitch and the way that player looks taking a pitch can tell you something. And the Giants have a few guys right now who do not look comfortable even just taking a pitch. And so whatever that means, whether they're out of their mechanics or they're not seeing the ball the way they usually do or whatever, I think sometimes even just watching how a guy takes one can tell you, is he locked in? Is he feeling calm and comfortable or not? And you're right. I mean, the check swings are part of that. Like that all is sort of tied together in my mind.
Talking with Dave Fleming here on 95.7 The Game, Giants Insider, voice of your San Francisco Giants for NBC Sports Bay Area. The Giants fell yesterday to the Detroit Tigers. Final score 3-1. Back in action today in Detroit. Dave, talking about this Tigers team real quick, and we'll get back. It's all about the Giants, obviously. But this Tigers team, I do think, is still slept on. They were an amazing watch last year as that final stretch happened. It was crazy out in the AL Central. They make that run. They won a first round. Scooble, obviously, is the talk. And thank God they probably missed him from this go-around because he was incredible in his last start. But tell me about this Detroit Tigers team real quick. Most wins in baseball, and yet it feels like they don't have that one guy in their lineup. Kind of how we look at this Giants team a little bit, that big bopper that you feel like. I know Riley Green is was their top prospects before. He's batting .270 this year. He's having a good season. Torkelson, obviously. Those are like prospect names, if you will. But they're not like, you know, the Juan Sotos, the Machados of the world. And maybe I'm just looking at that team saying, you know what? If the Tigers can do it with a non-quote-unquote big household name, Giants absolutely can.
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, it's not a coincidence that Scott Harris is here and he was with the Giants in 2021. I think the Tigers are kind of the current version of what the Giants were trying to be back then. And the Giants lost their way trying to be that version of that team. You know, they had one great year. The Tigers are trying to make that a little more sustainable. And what I mean by that is they've got a manager and a baseball ops president who are in sync with one another and believe that the full roster is how you navigate a 162 season. And so the Tigers, I mean, we saw yesterday, they used, what, five pitchers? They used their bench. Part of that is because Javi Baez got kicked out of the game, but they used three or four guys off their bench. That's what the Giants did in 2021, and that's what the Tigers are doing right now. Everybody on that team comes to the ballpark every day thinking there is a role for me in this game today. That can be a really powerful thing. That can be a unifying thing for a team. And I think it's one of the main reasons why the Giants won 107 in 2021. And when you have a season where, you know, some guys have career years and you stay healthy and you have that feeling, that sentiment going, that's a formula for a lot of success. It would not surprise me at all if the Tigers, I'm not saying 107, that's all big number, but the Tigers can win a lot of games if they stay healthy just with sort of a thing that they've got going right now. And can the Giants channel that? They can, but they've pivoted from that idea to something a little more stable in terms of your core players and letting those guys lead the way, which is also a tried and true formula. When those core players are not performing, you get a week like the Giants' offense has had. But I still think the Giants have a very clear game plan about how this team is going to be run this year, and I think it's a good game plan.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the Casa Grande kid, the Petaluma boy, Torkelson having a monster bounce back is, I'm happy for him. I'm rooting for him in Detroit. The guy that, you know, was a top draft pick, and one of the seismic shifts of the Farhan era was kind of like moving off Joey Bart and giving Pat Bailey carte blanche at catcher. And defensively, he's been spectacular. And I do credit him with a lot of what I've seen from the bullpen and the pitching staff, because there's been a lot of moving parts. And I look at the way that they've attacked hitters and stuff. I think he gets a lot of credit for that. But offensively, he's really struggled, Pat Bailey, that is. What's going on with him, Dave? I mean, he's in a little of a 2-for-19 slump right now. 14 of his last 85. He's not really barreling the ball up. How much can you tolerate? I mean, the defense is elite. That is real. I'm willing to tolerate, you know, a lack of offense, but it's really bad offensively. How much longer can they sustain this?
Yeah, I mean, I hate to say it, but 2-for-19, that's not a slump. That's his season. I mean, you know, like hit every 8 at-bats is about what he's done. So that, you know, that's 2 months of 2-for-19, basically. Look, Buster said it publicly at the start of spring training. He said it to Patrick individually, and he said it to everybody. The number one job of the catcher is to be the leader, the captain of the pitching staff. And the Giants have arguably the best pitching staff in the game, and Patrick is doing more than his fair share in that regard. And that is the number one job. And in some ways, it's up to everybody else to pick up the offense. Like, in some ways, what the Giants, you know, all-time greatest catcher has said is, let that spot be dedicated to what Bailey does best. And would we be talking about his offensive struggles as much if Lamont Wade were hitting and Willie Adames were hitting and Mike Yastrzemski hadn't fallen into a slump? We wouldn't be, probably. So I think the Giants internally are still focused on the great stuff that Patrick Bailey brings. It is, I mean, you can tell it's wearing him out because he believes he's a good major league hitter. And we've seen it in not just like short bursts. We've seen it for months at a time where he's been a way better offensive player than he's showing right now. But I still think that the number one job for Bailey is to do what he's done with this pitching staff. And so, you know, if you're looking for ways for the Giants to get this offense jump-started, I'm not saying Bailey wouldn't help if he gets the bat going, but what I am saying is I think the number one thing that needs to happen is offense from other spots.
No, that's a great point. We're talking to Dave Fleming here, our 95.7 The Game Giants insider, voice of the Giants for NBC Sports Bay Area, and we were referencing Patrick Bailey in regards to his peers, right? Fangraphs, his offensive rating is one of the worst with minimum 200 plate appearances. Amongst other catchers, but the defensive rating on the flip side is the best in comparison to the rest of his peers. So definitely a mixed bag there. But a guy talking, and we're going to wrap up the struggles. I promise, this team's 8 games over .500. We'll get to some of the good stuff, Dave. But just to wrap up this on some of the players that are struggling, Lamont Wade. Yeah, I mean, what more needs to be said? Batting 161 on the season, 22 hits, 270 on base percentage, slugging just 263. Just not where this team needs him to be at. And just only getting older at this point, too. 31 years of age, going on 32, Dave. Are we kind of seeing the last of Lamont Wade here in a Giants uniform?
I hope not. But that is a spot, and I think the three of us have talked about it before this year. Like, that's the spot where the other stuff doesn't overcome the offensive struggles. Playing first base, you know, I mean, I guess maybe if you're JT Snow level defensively or you know, even Brandon Belt was a great defensive first baseman. You can contribute to your team if you're like there haven't been that many of them. But if you're a really good base runner, Christian Walker, we saw that the last few years in Arizona, like he'd steal 20 bags and be a really good base. And so, you know, there are a few rare first basemen who can contribute in different ways and sort of mitigate some ups and downs offensively. Lamont's just not that style of player, and that's he never has been. He's worked himself into being a good defensive first baseman, but they need offense from that spot, unquestionably. And it puts extra pressure on his bat, unlike with Bailey, you know, where I think, you know, you just sort of you prioritize the defense. First base is a spot where you need offense, and they have to get more offense from that spot, have to. And the thing that's going to happen here is with Gerard Encarnacion getting healthy, he's going to get chances. Casey Schmidt, you know, Casey was hurt and missed a lot of time. But when they have given Casey an opportunity, I know the offensive numbers aren't great, but there have been some positive signs with him. Right-handed, left-handed, whatever, the Giants are going to start to try to find more offense from that spot because they have to get it. They have to.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. All right, let's get to the positives. Robbie Ray has been spectacular. I mean, just spectacular. And Logan Webb, I know the last start wasn't great, but he's been awesome this year. And I just look at, like, the young guys in general, whether it's Wisenhunt in AAA. I thought Harrison had a very encouraging outing the last time out. And obviously, Birdsong's trying to build up to where he's at. I really like where this staff is at, but I think the guy flying under the radar right now, Randy Rodriguez, I think he's going to be their all-star. I don't know if he'll be the one selected. He has been unbelievable.
What about Logan Webb and Robbie Ray? Those guys are all-stars.
There are a lot of really good starters. I'm just saying, like, I think Randy Rodriguez has been unbelievable because the way they've employed him, Joe, in high-leverage situations that aren't the eighth or ninth inning, he's a real weapon for this team.
Oh, gosh. He's amazing. Randy Rodriguez has been one of, if not the best relief pitcher in the National League. They're using him quite a bit. He's been in different circumstances, and he's just been great no matter how they've used him. He's been awesome. And he is just a truly remarkable story. We probably don't say it enough. I mean, 2 years ago, this was a guy who could not throw strikes and who had a lot of promise, and it looked like his career was just going to be derailed by an inability to throw strikes. Now he's got, 32 strikeouts, 3 walks in the big leagues? Amazing transformation for him and improvement, and he deserves all the credit for doing it. He's a stud. And I think, if you take a step back, because you guys are right, like they're 8 games over, they're just a couple games out in the West, they're in a wild card position. The big picture is very positive for this Giants team. Even just putting that aside, I would argue that the number one thing for this team is the young pitching, not just, sustaining, but establishing itself as the foundation for this team going forward. We know Webb is going to be a big part of that foundation. But you have Birdsong, Roop, and Harrison, and then throw in Randy and Camilo and whoever you want in the bullpen. There are a lot of guys down there who are young and inexperienced, but I'm especially talking about those young starters. If those three guys, if we emerge from this season – no matter what happens in the end, with the Giants feeling like those guys are a part of our starting staff for years to come, that is it. That unlocks so much else for you as a franchise to be able to focus on and concentrate on and, direct your resources towards. Like, the best thing that could happen to the Giants this year is for those, that core of young pitchers, to all blossom like it looks like they're doing. That pretends like a lot of wins and success in the near term for the Giants if that happens.
No, I'm glad you made that point because I was tweeting it out yesterday during the game. It's like, hey, look, like I get we're frustrated with Adames and all that, but I love the direction of where the franchise is. They have a lot of really good players. Like, Ramos is having a good season. I think he's been their team MVP offensively. Jungle Lee has had a good week, but he's had a good season this year. You referenced Yaz cooling off. Yeah, but he's had a good year this year. Matos has been struggling, right? But Fitzgerald's been a good player this year. They've got a lot of really nice pieces. They just need that one, centerpiece guy, and I feel like it could take them over the top and get them into the playoffs. But your point about the pitching is well taken. It's like, hey, look, Harrison's kind of been through the crucible now, and I'm hoping he can come out on the other side. Birdsong has accepted any role that they've asked from him. Camilo's been through the crucible, and he feels like he's a better for it, having come out on this end. They've got really nice foundational pieces. They're just missing that one kind of centerpiece bat who can hit 35, 40 home runs. And I guess that, they're hoping that's Bryce Eldridge, but that feels like it's a little far away. I feel like they can make a move right here in the middle of the season and really make themselves a legitimate playoff team. And it would be a hell of a story.
Yeah, it's just really hard to find that type of player in a trade mid-year. You can do what, you can do what the Padres did and give up your whole farm system for Juan Soto in the rare instance that somebody like that becomes available. you know, I'm trying to think about, I guess it's possible if things really go sideways with the Red Sox that Rafi Devers, you know, just because of, you know, a difference of philosophy, maybe he's a guy who would become available. But like, I'm other than that, I'm just thinking like of the teams that are really struggling, that are out of it, that are going to be sellers. Miami, Colorado, Pittsburgh, is there a foundational offensive player on those rosters? I don't think so. And so because I do agree with you, like that is the missing piece for this Giants team. They have a lot of really good, solid position players, but they do need somebody to drive the bus, like to be that middle of the order thumper. And they do expect Bryce Eldridge is going to get there, but he's not, you know, even if, let's just say the Giants are in it and they're contending and they're still not getting much from that spot, and they decide, all right, we're pushing the timeline with Eldridge and we're going to just roll the dice and see if he can give us a boost. He can give them a boost, perhaps, but we see it with every good young player. You know, take Christian Campbell for the Red Sox, who got off to this amazing start, and now he's in like a 4-for-40 slump. Mm. It's just hard, man. Mm-hmm. So Bryce Eldridge is going to come up at some point, and the Giants really believe in his talent, but it's not going to be instantaneous. Like, okay, there's your middle of the order all-star. That is not going to happen right away, no matter when they bring him up here. So that's a long way of saying they do need that on this team. They know they need that on this team, and it's hard to get. That's probably the hardest thing, you know, maybe other than a true ace. That might be the hardest thing to get in this sport.
Well, and especially now with that third wild card, Dave, everyone feels like there may be a player away. So, like, if you're just hovering around 500, hey, the Braves did it a couple years ago, right? And then they made a huge run. They got, like, a Jock Peterson. They made a move that actually wasn't as popular. They got, like, a Jock Peterson, right? I think they acquired someone else, and those guys were big playoff producers. All right, real quick, on your way out, we appreciate the time, Dave Fleming. All right, we were talking about booing. Just as a fan, if you've ever booed before in your life.
Well, because we want Willie to do well.
We do.
And I don't think booing him like that is productive. I don't think it's good.
Of course. I'm just bringing Dave on the conversation. It's not that serious. I want to know if a young Dave Fleming ever booed a player or a team, and when and where that happened.
I used to, as a kid, I would go to Bullets games. Well, first of all, we had, it's a longer story, someday I'll tell it, but we got season tickets to the Washington football team. And back then, that was a hard thing to get. And so we would go, you know, in the heyday when the Niners were great, when the Giants and Cowboys and Eagles were great, our team was great too. And we won 3 Super Bowls when I was a kid as a fan. And the Cowboys would come in, and we were booing them. I mean, like, that was part of going to the game. Like, you had to boo Danny White. Heck yeah, we're booing the hell out of him. I was 8 years old, and I was booing those guys. Remember the Bullets had this weird fan named Robin Ficker. And he became famous. He was a lawyer, literally a practicing lawyer, who went to the Cap Center in Landover and would sit near the entire game. This grown man, adult lawyer, and he became known around the NBA, and he would just wear these guys, Barkley and all of them. And I will say, like, some of my friends and I, when I was young, we kind of got sucked into that a little bit. Like, oh, that's the...
Oh, no, he's fading away, Dave Fleming. Oh, it's all right. I appreciate it. Dave, you're fading out there. Your connection's... a little thing, but I found the guy you're talking about, Robin Ficker. He's currently a member of the Maryland House of Delegates from the 15B district.
No way.
Yeah, this guy's a super fan.
He was the Marlin man of back then?
Yeah, no.
Except wearing people out?
This guy's got it all, man. And his first case was seeking to end the National Football League's blackout of sold-out home games. And he went to the Supreme Court of the United States. This guy's something else. Dave, we appreciate the time.
Oh, man.
Thank you so much. We'll do it again next week.
Sorry, my phone isn't cooperating.
You're good. You're good. Yeah. Good stuff, Dave. We appreciate
it,
man.
Love you and Hunter together.
I talk to you guys soon.
Thanks. That's Dave Fleming. I wonder if he's now jumped back onto the Washington football team bandwagon with Jaden Daniels as his quarterback. I wouldn't be mad at him if he's done that. Honestly, if he would have told me he stopped rooting for him because of Dan Snyder, I'd believe it. Or is he so ingratiated in the Bay now where he's a Niners diehard? That stuff never really goes away. Those childhood teams that you love, you got to stick to them. Although, I cannot think of a worse fan base to be a part of than the Washington basketball team franchise, whether it's the Bullets or the Wizards. Hey, you got MJ for a year.
Yay! Just for a second.
Oh, my God.
I hope you understand. There was a point in time, as a Warrior fan, I envied the Jameson, Gilbert Arenas, Larry Hughes, Washington Wizards, which were the East Coast Warriors. I was so envious of that team. You think I'm joking?
No. Caron Butler, too.
Caron Butler, but don't forget Brendan Haywood.
Yeah, of course.
Like, they had so many guys I liked.
Did you have a Wizards jersey?
No. But they had Juwan Howard and Chris Webber together with Rod Strickland was such a sweet team on 2K.
Brought to you by Rafael Lumber and Building Supplies, serving the contractors, homeowners, and the community we're in for over 50 years. Visit their showroom today. That was Dave Fleming talking about those Washington Bullets and being a fan and booing. And we just brought him into the conversation because we were talking about Willie Adames and how we don't think booing is the right move for him. And that's not what we're talking about here. But when it comes to ingratiating yourself to a fan base, the team has to win first and foremost. That helps. The team has been winning. And I do think his body language is helping him in this case. And him being a nice guy and him coming on to Willard and Dibs and being all great and hunky-dory and having a
humble.
Smile on his face. Being humble about
he
it.
He does
yeah.
seem humble.
And he's not going out of his way saying, like, look at me. I hate the all my production sucks and this sucks and this sucks. No, he's not saying any of that stuff. He's not. He's just keeping his head down. And as Sam's alluded to, he's been in the locker rooms and clubhouse. He's the same guy every single day. And that's kind of the player you want. You mm-hmm. want someone that's going to be the same in the good times and the bad times. Same thing you look for any partner, right? I know who I'm going to get. All right? Now, there might be some situations and tough challenges there, but at the end of the day, you're going to get through it. And hopefully, this is just a blip, and he can go round into form because, historically, and correct me if I'm wrong, Sammy and Joe, August is his best month. So he's a guy that gets hot towards the end of the year, and maybe if he could do that and this team's in playoff position, then look out, because that's the guy. If he gets hot at the right time, he could carry a team.
Well, you need him and Chapman to just get rolling.
Oh, God. Yeah.
I mean, if you could get both of them rolling at the same time, which is difficult, but if you could.
You're two highest paid position players. That would help.
I think it would be. It would take a huge load off of Wilmer Flores, because you got to assume Wilmer's going to at some point have a down little turn, right? Like, you cannot. Does anyone think Wilmer Flores is going to sustain? And I'm not trying to hate on Wilmer. He's had a hell of a.